We've got an interview here with Danielle Nicole from Kansas City,
I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And home to some great barbecue.
Yes, I had some amazing barbecue on Sunday, actually.
There you go. So anyway, you're coming to Connecticut, so I guess we can get started there. And you're kicking off the tour in Connecticut?
Yes, we are. I'm very excited to be coming to the Cape, bringing my awesome group and my new CD. And it's as we were talking earlier, it's a really, really great venue. So I'm so excited to be able to hit it, with my band and the new album.
Well, hopefully a lot of people will show up, and I know you're coming to Daryl's house too. And I'm going to encourage people, because if you're half as good as you are live as you are on your album, it's going to be an awesome show. So,
well, thank you. But one of my most memorable things about the Cape is just how amazing their sound and their crew is. So, like I said, I'm just really just over the moon to be getting back to that venue with my own band.
That's great. The new album is fantastic. As I said earlier, I've been following you ever since you played with your brothers and with Trampled Underfoot. And Every Inclination has always been on my top 10 list. Not that I've been doing this a very long time, but enough to to feature a lot of your music. And the nice thing is I very rarely ever repeat songs, but I've played Save Me probably at least a half a dozen, if not more, times. So.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad it's touched you in that way. it's a great song. I was really happy to get Kenny Wayne to guest on it too. He's such an awesome player and a cool guy. So.
Yeah, he is. I'm trying to get a hold of him too, because I'd love to get him on the station too. And I don't want to talk to him about his music. I do a car talk show on Saturday mornings. I want to talk to him about his cars.
Oh, I was going to say, he's got some. If it's not music, then it's definitely the cars.
Exactly. So he usually gets interviewed about the music, but I want to go with a different route. But anyway, this is about you. So
I bet he would love that, though.
He probably would. But anyway, every time I play Save Me, I always get at least two or three phone calls after I play it. And I say, who was that? Because it's a really powerful song.
Yeah, well, it's a very powerful time right now, and there are a lot of people telling you, what you should do and what they think and how they think that you should be and what they think you are. And so, it was just one of those times where I was just like, well, who are you to tell me what? Are you going to save me? Is that what's going to happen? You think you know me better than me? It was kind of one of those, just knowing what you're worth and not letting anybody's opinion, alter your path.
Absolutely. And there's too many of that happening right now with all the wonderful people that we elect into office trying to guide us in directions we don't want to go.
It's not just politically, though. It's musically. It's gender. It's racial. I mean, it's a very, very delicate time right now. And I think, like I said, I was just at one of those kind of breaking moments, being a woman in this industry, or basically any profession, is not not a lot of fun and a lot of time. So,
but
it was just one of those where, I was just like, it's you've got to figure out what's going on, because I'm all right.
That is true. Well, I got to tell you, I know it's tough being a woman in the music industry, but I got to tell you, the women are really, they're killing it. The guys better watch out, because you guys are taking over the blues. You gals, I should say.
We are. We've been underdogs for a little while. It's a very odd stigma. If you have an all female lineup on a festival, it's called a diva festival. But if it's an all male lineup, it's just called a festival.
Right.
Or you'll submit to a festival and they'll say, oh, I've already got my female act for this festival. And it's like, well, why do you only have to have one? And it's getting to be a very, very sensitive time for sure.
Yeah, well, I think you guys are going to emerge through this, because I think there's a lot more women doing blues now than men, I think.
Well, you're seeing this a very, very big uprising, and everything ebbs and it flows in a different way. And I'm not to say that it was ebbing or flowing, but the tides change, and I think people's tastes change, and And I mean, even the progression of the music, of the sound of the music, has gone. You know, it went so electronic for such a long time that was the norm, and now people are getting back into the live band scene, and you know, and then there's the whole jam band scene, and like, you know, when I was growing up, it was the Chicago blues that was really huge, and then it shifted down to Texas blues, and then, you know, and now it's over kind of the New Orleans, that, you know, the kind of the east of the South is kind of exploding now, and so it's just there's always going to be different directions, but yeah, there has been an uprising of women, and I think that over the decades there's just been more of an acceptance of it, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But I enjoy it because especially this past month in March was, you know, Women's History Month, so I did two shows with just women in the blues, and it's nice to know I could fill two shows worth of music with just women in the blues.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, and I think there's what,
because five years ago you probably couldn't do that.
No, you just have to play two or three from Coco Taylor and two or three from Etta James to fill it up. You'd have to do little segments featuring each artist. But I think that there's just a lot more opportunity. I think social media has really been a huge outlet to give voices to those who, you know, otherwise would not have had the opportunity to be heard or seen, you know. So I love seeing females coming up and killing it. I'm seeing a huge movement in the youth. There's a lot of girl power, and it's not so much, you know, the thought of being frenemies and, you know, being nice to each other's faces and then talking smack behind each other's back. There's really more of a sense of women togetherness and empowerment, and not necessarily man-hating, but really lifting each other up more than tearing each other down, because the opportunities were so small. You almost had to, you were so defensive about trying to find your place there that you're almost, you know, clawing your way to the top and just shredding whoever comes in your way or whatever. But it's not like that anymore. It's more about the women need to lift each other up, because, you know, we just need to band together. I mean, it's just the division is just so toxic.
Well, you can see that on social media with all the women in blues pages that there are and things that feature a lot of women. So there's a camaraderie there.
It's also odd to me because there's no men in blues pages. It's just blues pages. So I don't like the fact that so much that everybody's segregating themselves out into their own women's page forum, you know? So it's hard. I go back and forth about that, because like, there's no like men in blues page, or if there is, you know, they're not shouting it up from the rooftops. It's just the blues page, you know? So
right.
I would like to see just less divisiveness.
That would be nice. But I think if it wasn't there, the exposure might not be there for the women.
You're right. And there's a reason that it's got to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that it is. That's where I get inspiration from a lot of my music is finding new artists that post on there so I can find their music and play it.
Yeah. And it was sad, but I did run into something the other day where there was an artist that had posted. She was like, I was so excited to submit my music to open up for one of my favorite vocalists. And the woman said that I don't allow women to open up for me. And she was crushed about that. And I was like, man, that sucks. You know, it's just, I don't know whether it's an insecurity thing or what it is, but it kind of made me sad.
I know. I saw another woman post up. She was ranting about somebody said her voice wasn't dynamic or something like that. And she went on this whole rant. And it was a guy saying it.
Social media, it's hard to, you know, there's so many gray areas about it.
Well,
it's a great platform, but so many people mistreat it that it gets toxic. You know what I mean?
Oh, I can imagine.
Because then you have trolls on the women's pages, and you know, that are just saying just inappropriate things. And
well, that's where that whole rant came from. It was on one of those sites. So,
well, there you go.
But sometimes, you know, in today's culture, sometimes bad exposure still is good in some ways, because it still gets you out there.
Culture, that's always been a saying, you know. Yeah. Any press is good press.
Yeah.
Any press is good press. I'm like, well, I don't know.
So what other guests do you have on your new album? I know you have
we've got a ton of guests on the record. My guitarist Brandon Miller does a track that I wrote called Baby Eyes. It's kind of a slinky Kansas City type swing.
It's funny because the Brandon Miller Band is one of my favorite bands too. So he's a fantastic he's a fantastic guitar player.
He really is. I'll let him know when I see him next. He'll be tickled. My brother Nick is on the record from Trampled Underfoot. He played on it. My producer Tony, he got Sonny Landreth to do a guest spot on one of the songs that I wrote.
Is that the one that's got the slide on it?
Well, one of them. Yeah. The I'm Going Home is the one that he's on. Then Luther Dickinson played slide on the last song, Lord, I Just Can't Keep From Crying Sometimes.
Okay, yeah.
And then Mike Finnegan played on it, and then his son, Kelly Finnegan from the Monophonics, came in, and we sang a song together, and he played on a couple tunes. Bill Withers, I got to meet him. He gave me a song to record for the album.
Oh, wow.
So
you're in good company.
Yeah. He allowed me to pitch a song to me that had never been recorded before. And so we took a crack at it, and he liked it and said we could release it. So, I mean, it's an incredible list of people. Monster Mike Welsh is on it.
Yeah.
Oh yes. The way that he plays guitar is he emulates a vocalist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's insane. His playing is just so amazing.
Yep. Yeah, what's the reason why you don't play with your brothers anymore? I mean, I know your brother's, he's a guest on the album, but what happened with Trampled Underfoot?
Well, you know,
or did it just,
in a nutshell, it's just, 13 years of touring with your siblings just kind of takes its toll.
Yeah.
We went through a few really rough years of bad management before we started actually getting a team in place. And so by the time that we got to a healthy place business-wise, we were not at a healthy place mentally anymore. We were burned out with each other, with the road. We were just, because every day that you're home is somebody's birthday or there's a holiday, and you never really have that time to disconnect from what is, home life and what is road right. life and what is band life and what is business life. And I think it just got so incestuous in that way that, we just, at the end of it, none of us just liked each other, basically. And Chris, the drummer, he steps away in 2014, and Nick and I toured out that year to basically pay homage to all of our fans and friends that we've made throughout the years. And then when 2015 came, I decided to go solo instead of taking a hiatus. I was like, I can't go back and forth wondering if Nick's going to quit next time or if I'm going to quit next time. I was like, Chris, actually, when he quit, he encouraged me to go solo. And so I did.
Yeah, we already had the momentum.
I haven't looked back.
We already had the fan base from Trampled Underfoot, so.
We did. It was, it was a little bit harder than I thought it was, honestly, was going to be to get people to recognize the name, because having the band name Trampled Underfoot, it's like Danielle from Trampled Underfoot. And, most of the people would be like, oh, yeah, okay. But, I mean, it was lost in translation a lot. And so it wasn't starting from scratch by any means. But, the last few years have been very hard getting a good getting good traction. But, that's just with starting any business, And Wolfden really, really helped start to bridge the gap, between more of the outer circle of the blues, which is, some of the more of the just music festivals. I think Anders Osborne producing it really helped stretch that sound and that feel a little bit, having Stanton and Anders on it, and then going back to Tony, just taking that knowledge, it just really opened up a whole new world, for sure. But I don't think, you know, I don't think that I would have taken these musical chances with Trampled Underfoot, because I would have only had six songs to, you know, I would only had half the record to be able to do.
That's true, yeah. And you know, it's probably better to keep your family. Ultimately,
yeah, that's what was more important.
Family is the most important thing.
It is, and then it turns out that Chris ended up starting to play drums for me this year. So I mean, you know, once heal and the music lives on.
Yeah, that's great. So what? Where's the tour taking you this time?
Well, we're starting in Connecticut, and then we go up through Massachusetts and up to Maine, and then down to Pennsylvania. And I think we end up in Ohio, but it's going to be, you know, 3 straight weeks of racking. But we're leaving tomorrow for, where are we going? We're going to be doing a southern run. We're doing Atlanta, Nashville, New Orleans, Jackson, Austin. So got some pretty cool towns coming up over the next couple months.
That sounds like it's all. Now, do you do this full time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been doing this full time for many years.
Okay. I know, because I know sometimes musicians have a little something they fall back on, but I admire the ones that still try and do it full time.
Handiwork or whatever. Hang on one second.
That's all right.
On top of running a band and a business, I'm a mom of two.
Well, and that's the most rewarding one out of them all. So,
absolutely. But I like that I get to intertwine the music and my children, because you know I come from a long line of musicians. It's very generational. This isn't something that I just woke up and was like, I'm going to play music. This is in my blood, and it's what I've been meant to do. And yeah. I feel kind of an obligation to keep it going as well. You know, it's my great aunt and uncle. So I mean, I'm fourth generation. So.
It skipped a generation with me. I can't play a note, but I do know it sounds good. So that's why I get a chance to play the things that sound good on the radio. But my uncle's.
Hey, you can love it just the same. I'm a firm believer that you can love music just as much as any musician, even if you can't play it.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what. Being at a community radio station is such a blessing, because we can play whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to just go by what the playlists and the algorithms tell us we have to play.
Oh my gosh, some of the stuff that is popular. And I've always been thinking about that. It's not just because I'm getting older, you know, but I've always thought, like, why is this doing this? There's a lot of really talented artists that are out there in the mainstream,
yes,
area, you know, industry, for sure.
There are, but they're playing what they're told to play and not what they want to play, and they're not doing it very well.
Well, yeah, but then thankfully you have artists like Adele and Beyonce who, you know, they've been able to get to the point where they can write whatever they want and sing whatever they want, you know, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Cause
that they, you know, to see them to the point where... You know, but then on the other side of the spectrum, like we're talking about, then you have Taylor Swift, who just pumps out whatever drab.
Right. Well, it depends, you know, on
crud that she thinks the 14-year-olds want to hear.
Depends on what her relationship status is.
Yeah, right.
If she breaks up with a boyfriend, then she has a hit record.
Well, I'm not convinced she's really writing most of it.
No.
We'll move on.
We'll move on from that. but there's so many that fall between the cracks. And I think a lot of the blues musicians fall between the cracks too. Because some of the stuff that...
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you hear about all the guitar gods and all the different, you know, all the classic rock guitar gods that people think were so great. I'm telling you, man, some of these blues artists will blow them away.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, some of the good... I watched Kenny Wayne at the Experience Hendrix tour. And I'm telling you, there's nobody that could hold a candle to him playing like that. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
He's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, and I like Eric Clapton. I like a lot of the, you know, the mainstream guitar players. They're great. But they're on this status that I think a lot of the blues musicians should be, you know, on an equal level, or if not higher.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with, you know, Daniel and Nicole should be right up there with Adele and Beyonce and selling those kinds of records. And it'd be nice if blues got that kind of recognition.
Well, yeah. I don't know, but there's a sordid history, you know, with blues in general, and then especially with, a lot of people feel like it's been appropriated like a lot of other things. And
yeah, a lot of people think that new blues is not really the blues.
Mm-hmm.
We have a...
That's what people thought about Muddy Waters when he came out, because he electrified it, you know?
Yeah, now people think Muddy Waters is the real blues, but, you know, you got to go back even earlier than that.
Yeah, you got to go to Skip James and Charlie Patton.
Yep.
So you think about those artists, and then you think about what people were thinking when Muddy Waters came out.
Exactly, yep.
So it's all the evolution of music.
The blues is huge in Europe. In Germany,
absolutely.
And the Netherlands, they love the blues over there.
They love the blues, and they love the guitar.
Yeah.
They love, you know, Gary Moore, Robin Ford, Walter Trout.
Oh, yeah.
They love them guitars.
And those guys that you just mentioned, I could, you know, blow away a lot of the mainstream guitar players that are on this elite status.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, that you talk about, you know, I know John Mayer, he might be considered a little bit outdated now because he hasn't really been coming out with much stuff. But he's been known to, you know, sell 10,000 tickets and then play 3/4 of his show, just a straight burning blues set, and then he does all of his hits at the end.
Right. Well, getting back to what we talked about, a lot of the artists having to play what they don't want to play. And there's a guy that can shred, but he's playing all this other stuff because the record company told him he had to.
Well, yeah, I was just, Brandon and I were just talking the other day about, you know, Susan Zeschke and, you know, TCB, and they'll play their whole set and it'll sound amazing. And then Susan will just shred The Sky Is Crying, and the place is like losing their heads. It's, you know, and then she just goes into one burning slow blues song, and then they're just, their whole nights are just wrecked because they're just like, oh my God. It's so awesome, you know.
Yeah. There's so
many. And there, you know, TTB is definitely not a blues band, but, you know, you just lay down and it's more blues. Kill.
Yeah, they're more of a jam band, but when they decide they're going to do the blues.
Do what?
When they decide they're going to play the blues, it's incredible.
Yeah.
That's how she got her start, before the jam band thing.
Yeah.
I saw one show that I was... They're not normally known for blues, but it was probably one of the most incredible blues performances I'd ever seen in my entire life.
Wow.
It was Grace Potter doing 222 live. It started out this whole psychedelic thing, and she went into this smoking hot blues solo that was just absolutely incredible. It blew everybody's mind.
Because
nobody expected it.
Right, yeah. You don't think blues when you think Grace Potter, for sure.
No, but it was... It was actually pretty incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah, so what's on tap for you in the future? I know you're promoting this album, but you plan on doing this... you have any albums in the works following it up already? Or?
Oh, yeah, I'm always writing. So, I've always, you know, I've always got the next song in the bank. But I don't know. I would really like to try something with, like... I don't know, maybe a full live room sound in Nashville or something, just an open room, just go completely out of my comfort zone and record live, like a live studio album.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I've always wanted to do that. And basically a lot of my stuff has been live, and we end up using a lot of the quote unquote rough vocal takes, which are the takes on the kind of toss away mic that, you know, when you're doing tracking and stuff, the reference vocals, but we end up keeping most of those anyway. So I'm just like, we're going to use them anyway.
Didn't you do a live album at one point, but you didn't put it up for sale?
Oh, no. I don't mean a live album in front of a crowd.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, go into a studio and everybody is in the same room.
Oh, okay.
And you just play the one take. You don't add any tracks. You don't overdub anything at all.
Right,
like
just
what raw. like a live show with what you play is what you get. That's
sometimes,
what I want to do.
Sometimes I think that's the better way to do it.
Yeah, and a lot of the times I use the first takes anyway. But, you know, then we always record a couple to be safe, or we'll go back and do a solo, or we'll go back and do this. And I'm like, nah, I think we need just one chance. And, you know, do the song four times, take the best take of the four.
Well, it's funny because I talked to a few people that do the same thing. They record the scratch vocals or the scratch track, and they end up liking that one the best out of all of them anyway, so.
Well, yeah, because that's the one where you're not thinking about it, because you're like, oh, well, if it doesn't, you know, this one doesn't matter anyway. So you're like, you're free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Well, it sounds like you have somebody vying for your attention there, so I won't keep you any longer.
Yeah, my 7-year-old's got school in the morning.
and that is much more important than hanging out with me, so. But I do look forward to, I'm going to check out the show at the Kate, so I look forward to
awesome.
Saying hello when I go there.
Yeah, please do, definitely. And
I thank you very much for spending the time with me. I really enjoyed the album.
If there's anything else, just let me know. I'm happy to talk again before the Monday if you need.
Sounds great. Well, Danielle, thank you very much. And actually, before I go, what's your favorite track on the new album?
I would probably say the track that is dearest to my heart would probably be Bobby. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will play that when I air this, and I'll play my favorite track too, which is Save Me. And like I said, it's very rare that
if you're looking for more of a bluesy, then it Burning For You is a pretty good one.
So. Yeah, no, I've listened to the whole thing already, so. You know, it's only April. And I think I already have three that are already going to be on my top 10 list, and yours is one of them. So,
awesome.
All right. Well, you have a great evening, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks,
Daniel.
See
you in a few weeks, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.